Alright everyone, it's the Grimlord here and I'm back with another video, and this is the Grim Articles Show. You'll have to excuse me, my anxiety's been off the chain today, but I've been focusing on it. I was able to sleep, but, you know, just a racing heartbeat, and it's like, I don't even know why. That's what sucks about anxiety. Just like, oh yeah, your heart's gonna race for no fucking reason. Anyway, I'm not gonna let it get me down. Let's go ahead and get with the articles. But first, we have some sponsors. First, we have Spinning Robot Pussy. You can get one of those for your doll at spinningrobotpussy.com. Mine's here watching it, the show, anyway. And she doesn't really have need for one, but maybe your doll does. So pick one up. And then, of course, we have the Dragon's Treasure Tea, which is thedragonstreasure.com. Where you can buy yourself a variety of anime-inspired teas. So if that is your thing, go ahead and pick up some tea. Also, Jast USA decided to do something really interesting and take every single game that they've had massive discounts on and, well, release them all, discount them all at the same time with the same Black Friday discounts that they had. That means you can still get closed game for super fucking cheap. We've been playing it. You guys have seen it. Now you can own it and explore more of it than I will probably be showing you. So check out the other paths. And of course, you've also got Do You Like Horny Bunnies, which we'll be playing pretty shortly. And Onigoko, there's also some teacher game, and there's You, Me, and Her. I don't know what those are. Those didn't seem to interest me that much. But if you like any of those games, some of them are dirt cheap, because I know Horny Bunnies was only like, what, $20? So if you take 30% off that, that's going to make it relatively cheaper. So go ahead and pick those up. And that's all the announcements we have. So let's go ahead with our first article. Team builds first living robots that can reproduce. I'll believe it when I see it. According to the Weiss Institute, that's W-Y-S-S, AI design xenobots reveal entirely new form of biological self-replication, promising for regenerative medicine. So I think they're talking about nanobots here. In Burlington, Vermont, to persist, life must reproduce. Over billions of years, organisms have evolved many ways of replicating, from budding plants to sexual animals and to invading viruses. Now scientists at the University of Vermont, Tufts University, and the Weiss Institute for Biologically Inspired Engineering at Harvard University have discovered an entirely new form of biological reproduction and applied their discovery to create the first ever self-replicating living robots. The same team that built the first living robot, Xenobots, assembled from frog cells, you guys remember hearing about these, reported in 2020, has discovered that these computer-designed and hand-assembled organisms can swim out into their tiny dish, find single cells, gather hundreds of them together, and assemble baby Xenobots inside their Pac-Man-shaped mouths. That a few days later become new Xenobots that look and move just like themselves. And these new Xenobots can go out, find cells, and build copies of themselves again and again. With the right design, they will spontaneously self-replicate, says Joshua Bongard, PhD, a computer scientist and robotics expert at the University of Vermont, who co-led the new research. The results of the new research were published on November the 29th of 2021 in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. In a Xenopus levis frog, Latin, these embryonic cells would develop in the skin. They would be sitting on the outside of a tadpole, keeping out pathogens and redistributing mucus, says Michael Levin, PhD, professor of biology, and director of the Allen. Hold on, I've got you guys frozen the game footage here. Yeah. Alright. Alright, but we're... and the co-leader of the new research. But we're putting them into a novel context. We're giving them a chance to reimagine their multicellularity. Levin is also an associate faculty member at the Weiss Institute, and what they imagine is something far different than skin. People have thought for a long time that we've worked out all the ways that life can reproduce and replicate, but this is something that's never been observed before, says co-author Douglas Blackston, PhD, the senior scientist at Tufts University and the Weiss Institute, who assembled the Xenobot parents and developed the biological portion of the new study. "This is profound," says Levin. "These cells will have the genome of a frog, but freed from becoming tadpoles, they use their collective intelligence, the plasticity, to do something astounding. In earlier experiments, the scientists were amazed that xenobots could be designed to achieve simple tasks. Now they are stunned that these biological objects, a computer-designed collection of cells, will spontaneously replicate. We have the full, unaltered frog genome," says Levin, "but it gave no hint that these cells can work together on this new task of gathering and then compressing separated cells into working self-copies. These are frog cells replicating in a way that is very difficult from how frogs do it." "No animal or plant known to science replicates in this way," says Sam Kriegman, PhD, the lead author on this new study, who completed his PhD, and I don't give a shit. Okay. "On its own, the xenobot parent made of 3,000 cells form a spear. These can make children, but then the system normally dies out after that. It's very hard, actually, to get the system to keep reproducing," says Kriegman. "But with an artificial intelligence program working on the Deep Green Supercomputer Cluster at UVM's Vermont Advanced Computing Core, an evolutionary algorithm was able to test billions of body shapes in stimulation." Simulation. "Triangles, squares, pyramids, starfish, to find ones that allowed the cells to be more effective at the motion-based kinematic replication reported in the new research. We asked the supercomputer at UVM to figure out how to adjust the shape of the initial parents, and the AI came up with some strange design after months of chugging away, including one that resembled Pac-Man," says Kriegman. "It's very non-intuitive. It looks very simple, but it's not something a human engineer would come up with. Why one tiny mouth? Why not five? We sent the results to Doug, and he built these Pac-Man-shaped xenobots. Then these parents built children who built grandchildren, who built great-grandchildren, who built great-great-grandchildren. In other words, the right design greatly extended the number of generations. Kinematic replication is well known at the level of molecules, but has never been observed before at the scale of whole cells or organisms. We've discovered that there is this previously unknown space within organisms or living systems, and it's a vast space," says Bongard. "How do we then go about exploring that space? We found xenobots that walk. We found xenobots that swim. And now in this study, we found xenobots that kinematically replicate. What else is out there?" Or as the scientists write in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science study, "Life harbors surprising behaviors just below the surface waiting to be uncovered." Some people may find this exhilarating. Others may react with concern or even terror to the notion of a self-replicating biotechnology. For the team of scientists, the goal is deeper understanding. "We are working to understand this property, replication. The world and technologies are rapidly changing. It's important for society as a whole that we study and understand how this works," says Bongard. "These millimeter-sized living machines, essentially contained in a laboratory, easily extinguished and vetted by federal, state, and institutional ethics experts, are not what keep me awake at night. What presents risks is the next pandemic, accelerating ecosystem damage from pollution, intensifying threats from climate change," says UVM's Bongard. "This is an ideal system in which to study self-replicating systems. We have a moral imperative to understand the conditions under which we can control it, direct it, douse it, and exaggerate it." Bongard points to the COVID epidemic and the hunt for a vaccine. "The speed at which we can produce solutions matters deeply. If we can develop technologies learning from xenobots where we can quickly tell the AI, we need a biological tool that does X and Y and suppresses Z, that could be very beneficial. Today that takes an exceedingly long time. The team aims to accelerate how quickly people can go from identifying a problem to generating solutions, like deploying living machines to pull microplastics out of waterways or build new medicines," Bongard says. "We need to create technological solutions that grow at the same rate as the challenges we face. And the team sees promise in the research for advancements towards regenerative medicine. If we knew how to tell collections of cells to do what we wanted them to, ultimately that's regenerative medicine. That's a solution to traumatic injury, birth defects, cancer, and aging," says Levin. "All these different problems are here because we don't know how to predict and control what groups of cells are going to build. Xenobots are a new platform for teaching us." Well, shit, that's like right out of anime or some kind of sci-fi thing. Like, literally fucking regenerative medicine, where they can fix what's wrong with you by having a group of cells just fucking do what it needs to do. You know, the little Pac-Man fucking cures your cancer. Wow, think about that. That's actually pretty fucking cool if you think about it. I mean, you could probably do a lot of things with those little cells. So, they're kind of like nanobots. I think I was right when I said nanobots. They can also do really evil, fucked up things as well. Okay. The labor shortage is reshaping the economy and how people talk about work. Here's a glossary of the new phrases that sum up workers' frustration with their deal, from lying flat to anti-work. The labor shortage has its own language as American workers exercise newfound power. The slang of the Great Resignation captures emerging attitudes about work, and it has a Gen Z vibe. Oh my god. I'm just so excited, folks. It has a Gen Z vibe. Just absolutely. Oh my god. Not only is it anti-work, but it has a Zoomer vibe. Like, that is so Zoomer to be anti-work. And it has the right vibe, too. It's just like, wow. Man, I was almost worried, guys, for a second, that it wasn't going to have a Gen Z vibe. But it totally has a Gen Z vibe. Here's a guide to the key terms and tactics that workers are adopting. Okay, the historic number of job openings and quitting employees is coinciding with Gen Z's emergence in the workplace. Which means Gen Z doesn't want to work. As this won't happen, the newest generation of workers is bringing new norms with it. Corporate lingo is out, lulls on Slack are in, just not the laughing crying emoji. Beyond surface level communication, Gen Zers are bringing a new work ethos tied to ongoing labor movements. They want work they care about, that mirrors their values. They question the need for a traditional 9-to-5 rather than days that mirror how much time their work takes up. Their older millennial bosses are also scared of them, according to the New York Times. Oh, and strikes are back in full force. But short of this old-school union tactic, workers are finding other ways to express their displeasure with the demands of corporate overlords. Here's our ever-evolving glossary on the key labor terms and tactics you need to know right now. You've probably heard about or experienced the effect of labor shortages. This is the phenomenon of businesses, especially low-wage ones, struggling to hire. As a result, you might see some of your favorite restaurants closing earlier or their service slowing. There's no one reason for labor shortages. Mismatches between the jobs that are open and the skills that workers have are likely partially responsible. Hold on. Workers are also moving and leaving jobs behind, and workers have higher expectations and want more out of work after living through a pandemic. Labor Secretary Marty Walsh told Insider that he thought three things were driving shortages: the mere fact of living through unprecedented times, health concerns, and people rethinking what they want out of work. Importantly, there's a mismatch between businesses saying they're eager to hire and the people who are still out of work. For instance, in August, the black unemployment rate went up, well, even as businesses said they were scrambling to hire. William Spriggs, an economics professor at Howard University, not Harvard, and the chief economist for the AFL-CIO, described it as the self-evident discrimination in the labor market revealing itself. The black unemployment rate tickled. The black unemployment rate ticked down a bit in September, but remains elevated. Anti-work permeates online culture as people rethink 9-to-5s. The anti-work community on Reddit, Jesus. Anti-work community. Man, Reddit needs to be fucking just excised from the whole internet. It's fucking hell now. It started out as a hipster hell, and now it's a commie hell. And yeah, it's not gonna be good. Like, all the communism in the fucking country has probably got its roots in Reddit somewhere. With the number of followers skyrocketing, it's become the internet's new home for people who are quitting their jobs and revolting over low pay and poor working conditions. The subreddit has coalesced around ways that would fundamentally be restructured, Insider's Kat Tembarge reported. Posts ruminate on topics like length of the workday, the impact of overwork, and the ways that workers can build power. The subreddit has over 950,000 subscribers. Publicly available Reddit data indicates the subscriber count nearly doubled from about 500,000 in early October to over 900,000 by the month's end. A permanent slowdown or slow-up could make work life more sustainable. A work slowdown is fairly straightforward. It's when workers deliberately work slowly, often in an effort to change something about working conditions. It's one pressure unionized workers can exert. Erica Rodriguez argued in The Guardian that the current labor movement called for a slow-up or a widespread rethinking of the pace of work. The slow-up, Rodriguez wrote, signals that slowing down can improve workers' quality of life. The objective is not to drive down profits, though that may happen, but to uphold the ideal that everyone deserves a life of dignity, which includes rest and distance from work, Rodriguez added. Examples of slowing up, according to Rodriguez, could include checking your email on just certain days, or you could practice strategic time theft where you're not working during work hours but doing things like socializing, taking unrecorded breaks, or even just watching some TikToks. People are doing that anyway. It's time theft, but people are doing that anyway. I mean, some people are doing it because they're doing it. You know, I kind of upload some of these videos at work. In China, young people are lying flat after seeing their peers suffer from overwork. Lying flat is more than just resting. A translation of Tang Ping, it's a rebuke of work and hustle culture by Gen Z and millennial Chinese workers that's been likened to a spiritual movement, according to the BBC. The movement is created on people finding happiness in their lives and is taking the proper time to unwind, Inside Stephen Jones reported. The country's younger tech workers have contended with the 9-9-6 work schedule where they work 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 6 days a week. The concept is seen as a response to Neijuan, a word that describes the hyper-competitive lifestyle in China, Insider Cheryl Tech reported. The movement posits that it's okay and not good to strive for constant success in an upward movement. The Brookings Institution reported in July that Chinese state media decried the movement and that discussions across social media platforms had been shut down. The take this job and shove it indicator shows that people are quitting in droves. Some economists have latched onto a new phrase to describe the millions of people quitting their jobs. Take this job and shove it. The phrase was popularized in a country song. I thought that was that country song. In which the singer Johnny Paycheck croons, "Take this job and shove it, I ain't working here no more," interspersed with verses about his partner leaving, bosses with superiority complexes, and co-workers dying. The economic research group Data Trek Research created a "Take this job and shove it" indicator. Every month it tracks how many job separations came from quits rather than layoffs or other reasons for people leaving. In August, the indicator rose to a high of 71.1%. The YOLO economy means some people are quitting to pursue a better life. You only live once, and if you're like some people, you're not going to spend that time in your current job for 1 minute longer. The New York Times coined the term the YOLO economy earlier this year to describe the relatively well-off millennial workers who survived the pandemic and decided to overturn their lives. Their priorities shifted. Some took their side hustles full-time. Others moved out of state for a change, and still others are staying home to spend more time with loved ones. Dan Drewis, who left his corporate finance job to become a musician, built up his savings and financial strategy before taking the plunge from part-time music fan to full-time performer. "Honestly, I'm tired of doing spreadsheets all day," Drewis told Insider's Phil Rosen. "I'm ready to share as much happiness and love as possible through committing myself to music." Of course, the YOLO economy isn't applicable for everyone, the Washington Post chronicled some... The Washington Post chronicled... Some older workers still scrambling to find employment. The Times noted that many of the YOLOers were able to build up a financial cushion for their new lives. Organized labor strikes mean major work stoppages across the country as workers flex newfound power. Hold on just a second, guys. I gotta move this. Oh, nope, it moved itself. Okay. You've probably been hearing a lot about strikes in recent months as more workers take to the picket line. Simply put, a strike is when workers collectively stop working in an effort to change conditions about their work. Collective action by workers has been an effective tool for workplace change for centuries. The first recorded labor strike took place in 1156 BC, when Egyptian workers participated in a work stoppage over late payment. Damn! We're not gonna build this fucking tomb for you, Pharaoh. Where's my goddamn pyramid? It's not happening, Pharaoh. Not this fucking time. We're not doing it, you bastard. You don't pay us. We're not doing it no more. And these bastards over here, you got them whipping us. You ain't worth it, Pharaoh. The Bureau of Labor Statistics defines a major work stoppage as the stoppage that involves over 1,000 workers and lasts at least one shift. Over the past 2 decades, there has been an average of 16 work stoppages beginning each year. In the U.S., the National Labor Relations Act gives workers the right to strike, though there are limitations on what's considered a lawful and unlawful strike. Striketober! Wow, I didn't even know about that. Was when several major companies had work stoppages in October 2021. In October, an increasingly powerful labor movement took to the streets. Thousands of workers went on strike or geared up to hit the picket line over working conditions and contract negotiations. Labor activists and politicians called it Striketober. Over 100,000 workers voted to authorize strikes, the Hill reported. Over 1,000 workers at Kellogg's went on strike early November. Contract negotiations started up again in early November. There seems to be a movement sweeping across America with labor right now. People are finally standing up for what they believe, and the workers are trying to get what they deserve, Dan Osborne, the president of the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers, and Grain Millers Union, Local 50G in Omaha, Nebraska, one of the striking workers previously told Insider. 10,000 John Deere workers went on strike. In early November, they were gearing up to vote on a tentative agreement that would double an initially proposed wage increase. Tens of thousands of Kaiser Permanente workers are gearing up to strike with healthcare workers in Buffalo, New York. Oh, while healthcare workers in Buffalo, New York have been striking for over a month. Miners in Alabama have been on strike since April. We ain't working these damn mines till we get health insurance and dental insurance. Old Cliff here, his teeth falling out. He had 3 teeth yesterday. Now he's got 2 teeth. Tomorrow he might just have one. He could have had those 3 teeth restored. If just for dental coverage. That's all he needed. In May, Anthony Klotz, an organizational psychologist, uttered the labor phrase heard around the world, the Great Resignation. I don't know why I used the word great and called it the Great Resignation, Klotz previously told Insider. He had been using it at home with his wife to describe what he thought might happen to the workforce. It ended up being prophetic. For 5 months, Americans have been quitting at record rates. In August alone, the last month that the Bureau of Labor Statistics has released data for, about 4.3 million people quit their jobs. Some of them may have wanted to quit earlier, but waited during the pandemic. Others may be part of the YOLO economy or leveraging worker movements to find higher wages elsewhere. From organizational research, we know that when human beings come into contact with death and illness in their lives, it causes them to take a step back and ask existential questions, Klotz said. Like, what gives me purpose and happiness in life? And does that match up with how I'm spending my life right now? In many cases, those reflections will lead to life pivots. Some experts say that workers aren't just quitting for good, but switching to better jobs in a great reshuffle. All this shit is great reshuffle, great resignation, great reset. The Great Resignation even has its own offshoot, Insider's Hillary Hoffauer reported on the Great Reshuffle, where workers are switching from one job to another, with the youngest members of the workforce driving the trend. LinkedIn CEO Ryan Roslansky told Time in mid-October that year-over-year, job transitions on LinkedIn had gone up by 54%. For Gen Z workers, transitions skyrocketed by 80%, with millennials trailing behind at 50%, Roslansky said. A reshuffle might help workers do more than just escape from a crappy job. In July, Insider's Aki Ito reported that job switchers were using the red-hot labor market to supercharge their careers or land in a different field completely. Employers were getting into bidding wars, upping offers, and even offering hefty bonuses to lure workers to reshuffle with them. Well, I'll be damned. That's all it's giving me, folks. There's nothing else. There's nothing else. All right. Well, that is interesting. Hey, and we have a little side hustle too. I decided to drop the subscribe star dalt because you guys weren't feeling it. And Patreon just accepted our official Grimm's Hentai Corner Patreon page. So you can donate $5 a month and I'll give you guys special fucking hentai video content that you won't get anywhere else. It won't be on YouTube. It won't be on the Acronym site. It won't be anywhere else on the internet. And you can get it for just $5 a month. And I will give you that. Plus, you guys will also be able to decide what we play. You're like, hey, Grim, there's this game I've been hearing about. If you don't mind, would you buy it and check it out? Sure, if I like it and I think it's good. Or, you know, I mean, heck, I'll give it a shot. You know, I preferably don't like to do the yaoi stuff, you know. I'm not too much into men on men. But, you know, there's a lot of other stuff I'll give a chance. I'll give anything a chance. And that's how we got with Zero Chastity. I didn't know Zero Chastity was coming out. But one of my fans on Twitter got a hold of me and said, hey, there's this game called Zero Chastity. It's got my favorite hentai artist on it. And I'm like, okay, let me look at it. And I looked at it and I'm like, oh, you know, I might actually want to play this. So I have been playing it, and actually played an hour and 40 minutes last night, which will go up pretty shortly. And I might just put it up for you Patreon subscribers first, so you guys get to see it before Friday. Look at that. Yeah, so you guys might get to see it on Tuesday. Ah, see, that's a whole 4 days earlier. Just put it right up there on Patreon. And you guys subscribe, and there you go. You can watch the whole thing before anybody else gets to see it. So there you go. That'll work. Maybe I'll put my Starless stuff up there. Maybe even closed game. I'll put up stuff that I know you guys will want. And, of course, stuff that we hadn't done. Like maybe Big Dick at the Beach. A lot of more Cherry Kiss games. Little Nukage. I got a bunch of those I can play. Maybe some Princess X. You know, just stuff that you haven't really seen yet. Some of these might go up eventually on other sites, but why wait? You can look at them now, and it's only $5 a month. That's cheaper than I spend on my meal when I go to lunch. I spend like $5 on just my meal. And that's the first meal, because I usually spend like $10 a day. I'm only asking for $5 a month. That's pretty cheap. So if you guys are interested in our little side hustle, then check us out at patreon.com/Grimm's Hentai Corner. And thank you so much for your support. Okay, next we have something from... Good Lord. Another thing from Insider. The last one was pretty long. I hope this one isn't like... as long. Let's see. Oof. 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 Jesus. God damn. Oh my god. Holy shit. This is a book. This is like a book. How do I summarize this shit? Gen Z. Meet the typical Gen Zer who is quitting their job, has over 17,000 in student debt, and is influencing nearly everything you buy. Okay, Gen Zers, the oldest of whom turned 24 this year, make up the new It Generation. You mean the Shit Generation? You know, put the S-H. They're setting trends in fashion and in workplace, influencing consumer and worker behavior. And they're saving more than they're spending and set to dominate the economy in 20 years. Okay, we're not going to read this whole goddamn thing because I'd be here for the rest of the show. Gen Z has stolen the crown from millennials as the media darling of the moment. The generation whose oldest members turned 24 this year is the people who comprise it begin to wield influence over lifestyle, work, and consumer trends. Look no further than various headlines promising how to meet Gen Z demands in the workforce or market beauty brands to them. It's a coming-of-age story, and Gen Zers are shaking things up as they enter young adulthood. They're the first digitally native generation, and they're best reached online, where they're often catapulting new trends. They're innovative, entrepreneurial social activists ready to create and shape a better world. They were hit by the pandemic during some of their most formative years, which could shape their futures over the long term. The oldest members of the TikTok generation who graduated into a recession run the risk of repeating millennials' economic plight, but they're already showing signs of behaviors that could define them for years as they try to save and invest early and embrace a lifestyle based on thrift. By size and spending power, they're set to take over the economy in a decade, but their spending restraint and skepticism about markets could make the economy very different. While it's hard to capture an entire generation when some members are still teens and others are adults, demographic differences that produce data with caveats, here's what life looks like for the typical Gen Zer in 2021. They're the most ethically diverse generation in history and set to unseat millennials as the most educated generation. But Jason Dorsey, who runs the research firm Center for Generational Kinetics, says they're not millennials 2.0. They are a really distinctive generation with a different set of parents raised at a different time that are coming into the world with some different views, he said, adding that their oldest members are entering the life stage in which they're exerting enough influence to take the mantle as the it generation. Society feels like it fully understands millennials, he said, and is switching focus to the next generation, which remains a mystery. That leaves Gen Z shifting and driving much of the conversation, he said. He predicted they do so for the next 15 years. They're the first generation to grow up in a wholly digital era, which makes them tech-savvy and mobile-first. Gen Z was born into a world marked by technology, the internet, and social media. In an inside survey of 104 Gen Zers, the average one got their first smartphone just before their 12th birthday. They communicate primarily through social media and text and spend as much time on their phones as older generations do watching television. The pandemic heightened their digital behaviors. With ample time to scroll on their phones, they digitally bonded with one another, as many moved back home during the pandemic at a similar life stage, Dorsey said. This helped TikTok, Gen Z's favorite platform, blow up during the pandemic. By September of 2020, the social media app had grown by 75% and expanded into intergenerational use. It signals the growing influence of Gen Z in leading consumer behavior, much like millennials did with Instagram. The pandemic put Gen Z on track to repeat millennials' money problems. As is typical with recessions, the youngest workers were hit hardest. Gen Z students could lose $10 trillion of life cycle earnings because of COVID-19 lockdowns, the World Bank estimated. A Bank of America research report called OK Zoomer found the pandemic would affect Gen Z's financial and professional future in a similar way to how the Great Recession influenced millennials. Like the financial crisis in 2008-2009 for millennials, COVID would challenge and impede Gen Z's career and earning potential, the report said, adding that a significant portion of Gen Z entered adulthood in the middle of a recession, just as the cohort of millennials did. I'm a little worried about ending up like those who graduated around 2008, Maya Tribute, a junior at the University of Whatever, told Insider. A lot of the fear people of my age have about getting jobs right out of college have come from the horror stories of people 10 years older than us. It's really scary to think that this might be their new reality. And as of 2017, 70% of 1,004 Gen Zers in a CGK survey said they were already earning their own spending money. That's the same amount of millennials who are 10 years older on average. A follow-up on the CGK survey in 2020 found that the pandemic had taught Gen Z how to be frugal. They've been saving money and investing earlier than previous generations did, and they're seeking good job benefits, Dorsey said. More than 54% of Gen Zers in the State of Gen Z report said they are saving money since the pandemic began than prior to it. 38% said they opened an online investment account, while 39% opened an online bank account. Despite investing earlier, Gen Z is going to have to work harder to get a return. They're set to earn less than previous generations on stocks and bonds, as Credit Suisse's Global Investment Returns Yearbook found Gen Z could expect average annual real returns of just 2% on their investment portfolios, one-third less than the 5% real returns that millennials, Gen Z, and baby boomers have seen. Gen X has the most debt because they're in their prime spending years, followed by boomers, according to an Experian consumer debt study. It makes sense with the oldest members of the generation in their early 20s, and the majority of their cohorts still in their teen years. Gen Z has to enter their prime earning years or come into full spending power. The oldest are still getting their feet off the ground in the workplace, and most don't have assets like a home and a car as older generations do. That's not to say they're debt-free. On average, they carry a loan debt of $15,574, so says the Experian study. What was once largely viewed as a millennial problem is now becoming an issue for Gen Z. The generation holds 7.37% of the national $1.57 trillion student loan debt, but college is getting only more expensive. That share is expected to grow as Gen Zers enroll in college. The future of student debt is highly uncertain as President Joe Biden campaigned on canceling thousands of debt for each student, but he's been reluctant to do it since his election. The Democratic Party is in something of a civil war over Biden's authority to cancel debt unilaterally, leaving borrowers at a standstill. Gen Z had the most debt growth of any generation between 2019 and 2020, with the average balance increasing by 67.2% from 9,593, according to Experian report. But that's still less debt than all the other generations have. An experience said that the increase seemed to track with age. The greatest growth occurred among the youngest consumer group. That growth was mainly across mortgage and personal loan debt. Gen Zers owe $169,470 and $6,004 respectively. Ouch. It seems then that home buying Gen Zers are leading the charge in their generation's debt upswing. Bank of America's research OKZimmer report found that Gen Z would fare well in the long run. The Gen earns $7 trillion across its 2.5% cohort, the report said. By 2025, that income will grow to $17 trillion, and by 2030, it will be $33 trillion, representing 27% of the world's income and surpassing that of the millennials the following year. The research and advisory firm Gen Z Planet recently found that the generation was saving and investing more than it was spending, now holding $360 billion in disposable income. Research has shown that in moments of economic turmoil, humans are more likely to feel nostalgia. Gen Z's version of a nostalgic escape from the pandemic is reviving the fashions from the time before social media took over. From wired headphones to claw clips and baggy jeans, they're reviving the Y2K trends of yore and what Sarah Fisher of Axios has deemed a throwback economy. Corded headphones instead of AirPods, for example, are a way for Gen Z to make an anti-finance bro statement? What? They've been lusting after an old money aesthetic characterized by Oxford shirts, tennis skirts, and tweed blazers, a sharp contrast from the California rich look of the Kardashians and the casual outfits of the new millennial billionaire class that characterized the 2010s. Before the pandemic, the VSCO girl had the internet buzzing, characterized by a natural look that embodied a crossover between 90s fashion and surfer lifestyle. She was a contrast to the contoured faces and lip fillers of Instagram influencers. Well, that's good to see. They're not doing all that anymore. Gen Z's continued embrace of nostalgia is showing she was no fluke, but the harbinger of a new old look. Thrifting is booming, thanks to Gen Zers in search of sustainable, stylish clothes. I kind of stopped buying clothes from traditional stores, Grace Snelling, a Gen Zer, told Axios. People almost respect you if what you're wearing is thrifted and it looks good because you managed to pull off a cool outfit and it's sustainable. Recycling and reselling clothes helps the digitally native generation wear new-to-them outfits on a budget they haven't yet posted to social, avoiding repeating looks. It's also a tool to start a lucrative side hustle in which some are raking in as much as $300,000 a year on apps like Depop and Poshmark. The trend goes beyond clothing. Gen Z and millennials are even increasing eschewing mass-market home decor for vintage furniture. Insider's Avery Hartman's report. This is like the hipster thing all over again. Gen Z is asserting new norms in the workplace and eschewing the ones implemented by millennials before them. The New York Times' Emma Goldberg wrote that young 20-somethings are challenging tradition by delegating work to their boss, asking for mental health days, working less once they've accomplished their task for the day, and setting their own hours. As part of what Erica Rogers called a slow-up in a recent opinion piece for The Guardian, referring to permanent shift and slowing down productivity with the aim of having more separation from work. But some Gen Zers are quitting their jobs altogether in what LinkedIn CEO Ryan Roslansky, I'll pronounce this man's name right eventually, called a great reshuffle. We talked about this already. He said his team tracked the percentage of LinkedIn members who changed their jobs listed in that profile and found that Gen Z's transitions had increased by 80% during that time frame.
I don't know if I should finish this one or not. It's an August survey by Personal Capital and the Harris Poll. In an August survey by Personal Capital and the Harris Poll, a whopping 91% of Gen Z respondents said they were keen to switch jobs more than any other generation. While some are seeking greener pastures in other jobs, others are opting out of working altogether, bolstering the anti-work movement that embraces a work-free lifestyle. While the vast majority of Gen Zers haven't yet entered the workforce, it stands to reason they'll be just as progressive as their older peers. Gen Z is innovative and powerful. Emma Havighorse, a 2020 graduate, told Insider last year, "The way we see this world is very different from prior generations." For 3 years, Havighorse has hosted the podcast Generation Slay, which profiles Gen Z creators and entrepreneurs like the mental health advocate Gabby Frost and the nonprofit founder Zlad Ahmed. She said she thought the pandemic would produce even more innovators. "Necessity breeds invention," she said. "We'll be trying to figure out solutions to problems that plague past generations. Consider the high schoolers Daniel Lan and Jalen Zing, who created homemade face shields for hospitals during the pandemic, starting the initiative Students for Hospitals." More than 58% of Gen Z respondents in a Do Something Strategic survey said that since the pandemic started, they had picked up a new activity or were doing more of something they already enjoyed. A generation whose childhood was defined by international protest movements, including Occupy Wall Street and Arab Spring, Gen Z has been at the forefront of activism, from the March for All Lives anti-gun protests, and the climate crisis movement. Its most famous member is perhaps the climate crisis activist Greta Thunberg. How dare you? How dare you? 2020 also put the generation front and center in the anti-police brutality demonstrations marked by the killing of George Floyd. Why do we have to talk about this? We already know. And then we have the social networking app Yubo. I don't even know what the hell Yubo is. An insider polled 38,919 U.S. Gen Zers and found that 77% of respondents said that they had attended a protest to support equality for Black Americans. The generation also played a pivotal role in the 2020 election, insiders Julian Kaplan reported, which may have finally captured the elusive youth turnout. Tufts University Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement said youth voter turnout for 2020 was up by at least 5% from 2016 and could have been up by as much as 9%. It seems then that change may start with Gen Z. Yeah, I don't get this. Twitter trending and promoted, fucking loaded with side nuggets and hints for how shit. Yeah, I know, they're progressive as hell. We're gonna have to deal with all this shit. Basically, okay. For the rest of us, if you like your old school media, now is the time to start backing it up. Back it up before they start changing and trying to edit old things and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, now is the time to start doing that, because they're going to try to make all that old stuff out to be awful. Everything you enjoy out to be awful. Reboots to ruin everything you enjoyed. Just back up all your old shit. Okay. Oh, no. Oh, no. Okay, here's a big one, guys. New Twitter CEO wants to focus less on free speech. Claims there's no distinction between white people and racists. Time to leave Twitter! I know I just promoted my page on Twitter, but if they start, you know, getting rid of shit, people that are white... Well, I'm off. I'll find another platform to promote on. Agarwal joined Twitter in 2011, but still doesn't know how to scrub his own tweets. Parag Agarwal, the new CEO of Twitter, previously claimed that the platform should focus less on free speech and tweeted there is no distinction between white people and racists. On Monday, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey announced that he was stepping down from the position effective immediately and that Twitter's chief technology officer, Parag Agarwal, would replace him. I've decided to leave Twitter because I believe the company is ready to move on from its founders, Dorsey said in an email statement. My trust in Parag, you know what? I have a theory. You want to hear my theory? I have a theory that he stepped down because of the Ghislaine Maxwell trial. I think he's going to be indicted in something. I believe the company is ready to move on from its founders, Dorsey said in an email statement. My trust in Parag as Twitter CEO is deep. His work over the past 10 years has been transformational. I'm deeply grateful for his skill, heart, and soul. It's time to lead. In response, it's his time to lead, rather. Not, it's time to lead. It's his time to lead. In response to Dorsey, Agarwal said that he was honored and humbled and had deep gratitude for him and the team at Twitter, adding that he was filled with so much excitement for the future. Now he was to lead as CEO. Our purpose has never been more important, he said in an email. Well, I guess I can always go to locals. However, skeletons have already jumped out of Agarwal's closet. In an interview from Just a second, guys, because you're probably going to see me die a million times here. I've got to fast forward this. It's constant death for hours and hours and hours because I had the hardest time beating this motherfucker. Alright, there we go. Okay. However, skeletons have already jumped out of Agarwal's closet. In an interview from November 2020 with Technology Review, Agarwal, in his position as Twitter CTO, said in response to a question about combating misinformation that Twitter should not be bound by the First Amendment and focus less on free speech. Our role is to serve a healthy public conversation, and our moves are reflective of things that we believe lead to a healthier public conversation. The kinds of things that we do about this focus less on thinking about free speech, but thinking about how the times have changed. One of the changes today that we see is speech is easy on the internet. Most people can speak. Where our role is particularly emphasized is who can be heard. The scarce commodity today is attention. There's a lot of content out there, a lot of tweets out there. Not all of it gets attention. Some subset of it gets attention, and so increasingly our role is moving towards how we recommend content. And that sort of is a struggle that we're working through in terms of how we make sure these recommendation systems that we're building, how we direct people's attention, is leading to a healthy public conversation that is most participatory. Uh-oh. Previous disturbing tweets have also been unearthed by keen-eyed Twitter users. An October 2010 tweet, the new Twitter CEO wrote that if they're going to make a distinction between Muslims and extremists, then why should I distinguish between white people and racists? Although the statement was likely a direct quote from somebody else, it is unclear why Agarwal would have posted such a divisive statement without qualifying it if he didn't believe in it. Andrew Torba, CEO of alt-tech social media company Gab, argued that the tweet was proof that Agarwal is anti-white. National File has reached out to Twitter for comment on what Agarwal meant by his tweet and asked if the company agreed that redirecting bigotry against an entire racial group is an acceptable response to facing bigotry. This article will be updated with any response from Twitter. It is unclear why Dorsey is stepping down as Twitter CEO. Elliott Management, the investment firm with a stake in Twitter, reportedly sought to remove Dorsey from his position in 2020, although a deal was reached with Twitter's management to keep him as CEO. Speculation has unsurprisingly abounded that Paul Singer, the founder of Elliott Management, has now been successful. Has now been successful. I didn't see that period. Tucker Carlson in 2019 slammed Singer, claiming that people like him are destroying Middle America. Yeah. Well, there you have it. And I was going to talk a little bit about the Twitter situation. Yeah, see, I go to Twitter for most of my porn because there's a lot of porn bots on there. And you can just see a lot of stuff. And, if they're gonna, restrict that, and they'll probably get rid of the adult content, I think they will. People will just find another place. I mean, that's all that's gonna happen. People are just gonna have to find another place. You know, it is what it is. I'll probably go to locals, I guess. Maybe I'll try locals. A lot of other people are using locals. So I might go there for my hentai stuff, depending on their, you know, what they feel. I don't know how they, what their adult content policy is. But I also thought about going to Odyssey also as an additional website. I know YouTube's doing well, but I definitely want to try to check out Odyssey as well, see if I can get an audience there. But, yeah, what I'm saying is, yeah, this is the turning point for Twitter. This is where people are going to start being completely censored and removed for their opinions and mass. You're going to see a lot of people that you like to hear from get completely removed and banned from the platform. It's going to push people directly to other sources, and that's just what's going to happen. This Argyval guy seems like he is not willing to promote free speech and has been very clear about that. It is not going to be a place for people with the wrong opinion, the opinion against the status quo. It is becoming authoritarian and dictatorial, tyrannical. Tyrannical is a word we can use here. So it's probably not going to be a good place to continue using, to continue this, your conversation, I guess you could say. Doesn't seem like a good place. It seems like it might be time for you to find another platform. Like, I wonder what all these fucking platforms, these Gen Z, like Yobo? Never fucking heard of Yobo. What the fuck is Yobo? All I know is there's 31,000 goddamn people out in there that at least did that study. But there's all these other platforms that Gen Z's using. They're probably all woke as fuck. They're probably even more woke than the ones that are trying to be woke. So, see, they have their own woke platforms. That's what I'm saying. But now they're trying to bring... See, here's what happened. Gen Z has their own slew of woke platforms. Most of the people that are on, like, Twitter and shit, they're, like, our age. They're, you know, Gen X or Boomer or Millennial. They're not Zoomers. Zoomers like TikTok and shit like that. Like, they like all the Millennial apps. Not the Millennial, but the Zoomer apps. So these other apps, like, I don't know, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all these apps, of course, the Zoomers use Gram a lot, so I guess Gram can't be counted in that. But Facebook and Twitter, you know, old apps that I remember coming out when I was young. Yeah, now they're trying to appeal to the Zoomers because they don't want to lose their audience. They know that the Millennials and Gen Zers, Gen Xers, Boomers, getting old. They're going to die off. There'll be less of them, and they won't be able to make as much money. They won't have as big of a, you know, a presence. So basically what they're going to do is they're going to try to appeal to Zoomers. And the only way you appeal to Zoomers is by getting rid of all the things that the Millennials and the Gen Xers like. And basically that is called, like, they're just going to remove those people. They want them to pretty much die off. They want us to pretty much die off. They want us Gen Xers, Millennials, and Boomers to all die off. So that's what they're doing. That's all they're doing. They want to push us out of their conversation. They want to control the whole world. And they want us to die off. That's what they want us to do. So I hope you guys kind of realize that. Now, not every Zoomer feels the same way. There's a lot of Zoomers and maybe even Gen Alpha that are not with this shit. And maybe that's the generation that changed us. But it is not the Zoomer generation. Someone said that Gen Z was going to be anti-woke, and I have disagreed a million times. No, Gen Z is going to be the most woke generation we've ever had. It's Gen Alpha that will be the base generation. So you got to wait another 10 years, guys. It's going to be 10 years of fucking hell. 10 years of seeing every goddamn thing you like being destroyed. Because of these Zoomers in Hollywood trying to appeal to them. You're going to see a lot more anime get completely fucking destroyed, like Cowboy Bebop. And it's just going to continue. It's not going away. Not for a long while. Wait till Gen A gets in there and they get fucking sick and tired of it. Gen A right now is the VR generation. I was watching on Facebook, there was this I think she's a bodybuilder. I'm not sure. It's hard to tell sometimes, you know, because they're not always just ripped with muscle. Sometimes, you know, they're lounging around and they're just kind of wearing, you know, they're not wearing tight clothes. They're just wearing regular clothes. So you can't tell if she's really muscular or what she is. But anyway, she and a friend of hers were around and they showed the kid in the background. And the kid is walking around. He's got the Oculus on. And he's just walking around with the thing just like in his own little world. That's your Gen Alpha right there, guys. That's Gen Alpha. You see that kid rocking around with his little headsets on? All these kids are walking around with their little headsets on. That's the future, guys. That's Gen Alpha. Gen Alpha is the VR generation. Okay? They're growing up with VR. They're going to be the Ready Player One people. I mean, will we get into it? Yeah, the same way that the 40 and 50-year-olds got on to fucking Facebook eventually after, you know, we got on it first. And then they were like, oh, we got to join on there too. Got to join in there too. Yeah, we'll be there. But it's going to be weird because, yeah, I mean, just like with Facebook. But yeah, we'll be there. We'll be there in the probably working on stuff that they've worked on. Because you know Gen Alpha's working on the AI. You know Gen Alpha's working on the VR waifus. You know that waifuism is spreading like fucking mad in the Zoomer culture. Because why have a girlfriend when you can have one on your headset? Think about it. If you don't want to remove your headset, and I have a feeling, that this is just a feeling, that these kids are going to get to the point where they don't want to take their headsets off. Like, they don't. It's like one of those things where I don't want to move my headset. They're going to prefer those worlds to the real world. And, like, dude, they're like, why have a regular partner when you can just have a fucking animated waifu character of your own? They'll even probably try to start making those things. I wonder when they're going to turn them into streaming things. Where you literally just put the thing on and you can stream all your content on your headset. Now, somebody will tell me you could probably already do that. But, I mean, they're even talking about, like, movie theaters, where you can go see a movie with somebody in virtual reality. So, I mean, that's kind of cool, though. But the thing is, yeah, it shows that we've got a generation that is going to live in the virtual world. And we need to get ready for that, because that's next. This is a social media generation, but social media is, I'm going to tell you, I've got my crystal ball. I actually fucking happen to have it here. I'm making my prediction. Social media is dying. Okay, that's my prediction. Social media is going to be replaced, and Mark Zuckerberg is right. Yes, Mark Zuckerberg is right about the metaverse VR shit. He is right about it. He is 100% right about it. I know that's going to happen because you can already see it happen. He made the Oculus. The Oculus was a good decision on Facebook's part because it absolutely did create the VR for the kids. The kids adopted it. If the kids said, nah, this sucks, it would have been gone. The kids are not saying, nah, this sucks. The kids are playing Resident Evil 4 on VR and it's good. It's good. They've made a VR Resident Evil game, and it's good. Keep that in mind. There's a Half-Life Alyx game, and it's good. There's games on VR that are actually good. That's what I'm saying. This isn't a bullshit tech. This is a tech that's actually gotten to the point where there's games that people are playing and enjoying. There's worlds that people are enjoying. You can fuck girls on there now. There's all kinds of sex games on there that they're working on. Hentai's gonna be going through there pretty soon. Maybe we'll do VR Hentai Corner eventually. I don't know. But this is the future. VR is the future. And Zuckerberg got that shit right. So I'm telling you right now, guys, that's where we're headed. Social media is dead. All it is a bunch of arguing and bullshit. It's not real conversation anymore. It's a bunch of fucking boomers and millennials and Gen X's arguing over goddamn politics. That's going to get old fast. Facebook's going to realize that's getting old fast. That's not going to last. That's why they pushed so far into the metaverse. Because they know it's dead now. All the stuff that was good about that platform is gone. And their metaverse, I don't know how they're going to treat the metaverse, but I do know that VR is going to have more free speech because they're already having free speech programs. Folks, there are probably, and don't even, like, let's not even beat around the bush. There's probably games that are underground being developed for people that are into really fucked up shit. just gonna say, really fucked up shit. You and I both know it. And they're probably being developed under the, you know how they do. That shit's gonna happen. Because if you have a platform where you can simulate sex with damn near anything. Unfortunately, some of those things are probably not gonna be cool. But again, you know, it is what it is. We can't stop it. At any rate, guys, that's all I gotta say on this one. And I hope you guys have a good morning, night, whatever. And this is the Grim Lord, of course, and I am out of here. I'll see you guys later. Enjoy the decline.